Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Hi, anybody there? Hello.
Hi, it's Marguerite.
Hi, Marguerite, it's Tina.
How are you?
Oh, good. I went out. We could finally go out hiking today. It hit 80 instead of 95. That felt really good. How are you doing today?
Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave. I hope you're all doing great. Anybody want to start any good gossip or just say hi while we're waiting for everybody to join?
Is this our last week of this class?
This is it. We're talking about neuromarketing, your professional services and products today. So this is our fourth and final week, yeah. I really appreciate the feedback and the kind words that many of you have sent. This has been a fun group to interact with. Has any of what we've discussed been useful to you in your professional services or products at this point? Any applications?
Dave, it's Marguerite. I have
Hey,
used
welcome.
this. Hi. I have used this to fine-tune my website to make the content more engaging.
Okay. Great. Can you summarize in a sentence what you've done differently to have more of an impact or a resonance?
I speak to the client directly through my website as though they were sitting right there in front of me, face to face.
Okay. Okay, great. Thanks. Thanks for that feedback. Anyone else? Are any questions that any of you have that may not have been clear that that we didn't cover fully or completely as we were going through things?
Hi, Dave. Good evening. This is Guy. How are you?
Hey, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just had a quick question for you on the calls that are online. How long do we have access to that?
Those will be up for 30 days after the last recording, which is today. So they'll be up for another month.
Gotcha.
Okay?
Excellent. Because I'm probably going to want to go through them all.
Great. There was one question that that was sent in, and I wanted to address that before we moved into our topic for today. I'm going to leave this line open if you'll manage the background noise, so if you have any questions or comments. And the question basically is does proven evidence change beliefs? Now, my suspicion here is that someone's trying to influence their spouse more than trying to look at marketing and development. But a very brief overview here. Facts and logic are not powerful tools to alter opinions, as we've talked about in a number of ways. Data is just not a way to change minds. It's not how we decide. Established beliefs are extremely resistant to change, even when evidence, even when scientific evidence, proves different than those beliefs. People believe data provides good evidence not to alter their minds, but when it reinforces their existing views. Now think about that and think about how when you're reading something, you're searching for something to validate your belief rather than searching for something to discombobulate how you're thinking about something, so you have to start all over and, you know, hatch some new ideas. Now, in fact, this is how arguments solidify an original position more staunchly. Presenting people with information that contradicts their opinions will cause them to generate new counter arguments to further strengthen their view. This is common enough, it's even given a name, the boomerang effect. So what happens is that people grow more confident in their initial convictions. You know, that's why things like presidential debates and arguments and all of that don't really change people's minds. We cherry-pick information to fortify our beliefs without even being consciously aware of it. So the question then can be, what can we do to change beliefs? That's a reasonable question from given what we know about how data, information, and facts don't change beliefs. Since information is valuable, since we all evaluate information relative to what pre-established beliefs are, and remember, a belief like a fact is an anatomical reality in the brain, so you're not going to just suddenly, you know, override a belief that's already there by presenting a new one, even if it's better. So it more likely will be considered invalid instead of dispelling a cemented belief. So what's the option? One is to implant a new belief. This notion has really generated a number of studies about decision-making. Influence behavior by building on common ground and established beliefs instead of trying to prove somebody wrong. Because an argument that you offer will only solidify the other person's point of view. Now, most of you know this, and the best application here may be to inform how you don't argue with your spouse or your partner. And we're going to be talking about, as part of neuromarketing, we're going to be talking about how to deal with objections. But this was just different enough in a specific question that I wanted to respond to. So the application here is, when an established belief is difficult to counter, seed a new one. And this is part of, remember, you have to enter the circle of your client. In this instance, enter the brain of your client to see what's already an established belief in order to seed another one that's related but different, instead of trying to counter the one that's already there, because the end product, the end result, will be, it'll be there even more strongly. So to elicit change with success, identify existing beliefs, common motivations, and common goals. Enter the circle and go someplace new together. So any thoughts or comments or anything else that might be, I hope that was a helpful answer to that question. It's a great question. Anything else you'd like to discuss before we move into our topic? Okay, well, I'll reserve some time at the end for discussion if there are any comments or things you'd like to expand on. Okay, we're going to talk about neuromarketing, your professional services and products. Let's do a quiz. The Wharton School of Business surveyed several thousand professionals to examine the major factor, the one factor that determined whether someone engaged or declined services from that professional. Signed on or declined, in other words. What do you think was most important? Years of experience? Reputation? The amount of the fee? Degrees and certifications? Stating the recommendations and fee clearly and confidently? State of the economy? We'll come back to that. Here are four questions to consider. Each is a yes or no. Jot down your immediate answer next to the questions on your outline. Do you earn your living by offering others goods or services? Again, simple, yes or no. Do you work for yourself or run your own operation, even if part-time? Does your work require elastic skills, the ability to do a variety of different functions through the day? And four, do you work in education, training, human resources, or healthcare? If you answer yes to any one of these four questions, you are in sales and service. If you're a doctor, attorney, accountant, consultant, coach, or business professional, you're in sales and service. To deliver a fantastic experience to your prospect is the best sales strategy there is. So we're going to talk about specifically neuromarketing. Neuromarketing integrates biological and social sciences to understand unconscious choices and the underlying brain activity that determines consumer behavior. When we engage potential prospects with a product or a service in mind, we invite them to part with their resources, including time, attention, effort. If they do, we'll bring value, and they will benefit from the engagement. Teachers sell their students that the science lesson they're teaching is interesting and beneficial. In healthcare, the physical therapist helps somebody recover from injury to handle resources, time, attention, and effort, because patients can be healthier if they use those resources wisely. Here's what we know. To move people effectively and powerfully requires seeing them as a participant and a collaborator. Here's what happens when you don't do that. When people see a physician, fewer than 50% who get a prescription from this expert consultant actually fill it. Of those who do fill it, fewer than 50% take it as the doctor directed. So when somebody is motivated by fear and pain, inconvenienced by time and travel, and have to pay the consultant expert, less than 25% actually follow that expert advice. It doesn't become their story. Consider this question for yourself and write down a specific number as soon as you hear the question. What percent of your real work informing, convincing, or persuading people to give up something they value for something you have? What percent of your time is that? Something that will bring them great value. Almost 10,000 professionals around the world were surveyed to address this question. Nearly everyone considered this aspect a crucial component of their success. Yet, while most people believe direct persuasion is essential for professional success, the time allocated to engaging and directly persuading people was in the low single digits. What we find valuable and what we may actually do can differ significantly. When we work for ourselves, as entrepreneurs, we become salespeople as well. What people in sales do is to move people. Do you know how you can tell the ones who don't do this or don't pay attention to this? They're the ones with the really skinny kids. The persuasion industry, now informed by neuromarketing, focuses on most everything we buy, what we purchase for emotional reasons and then justify by logic, is shaped in ways so subtle that we may fail to recognize them. Here's an example of a failure in influence. A cigar manufacturer spent considerable money on an advertisement that depicted a beautiful, smiling woman handing out cigars to her husband and his friends. This was attractively produced in an elegant English library setting and widely distributed. The result? A dramatic fall in cigar sales. What happened? When men smoke cigars, they unconsciously feel dominant and important. By showing a woman, encouraging a man to smoke, or being subservient to her offering, the advertisement psychologically countered the male customer's intent. So let's consider now some misconceptions about selling. For 3 years in a row, my good buddy Art Wilson was the number one salesperson in IBM's group of over 10,000 healthcare sales professionals. This was in the 80s, before he moved to a senior executive position there to train their sales forces. He then took an early retirement to start his own hugely successful consulting firm, working with the sales forces of multinational corporations. You would never guess that this guy was in sales. He's a big, gentle, laid-back, lovable guy, kind of like me. In researching this material, I ask Art if there are common misconceptions about selling. Here are the two biggest misconceptions he passed on. One, selling is a natural gift. For more than 90% of people, including the most successful salespersons, this is simply not true. Someone may do the right thing for the right reason, but it has to be combined with the right style and emotion. It's an art and a science with its own body of knowledge. Two, the best salespeople have no call reluctance. Over 90% of the best salespeople regularly have call reluctance, but they do it anyhow by getting in the optimum state of mind and sticking to their plan. Pick people you want to reach out to and do it. You don't have to be motivated, but you have to have a plan and stick to it. Shrink the change, a designated number of contacts per day. From a number of conversations and interviews with outstanding sales professionals, these two questions form the heart of the sales exchange. One, if the person you're selling to agrees to buy, will his or her life improve? And two, when your interaction is over, will the world be a better place than when you began? If your answer to either of these two questions is not yes, you need to recalibrate. It's said that marketers often make these three mistakes: assuming people are rational, assuming people are eager for change, and assuming that once someone knows the things the way you know them, they'll choose what you choose or offer. Remember this: it's what you think you already know that will most prevent you from learning. Professor Harold Coe teaches law and emphasizes that in an attempt to understand the law, or in understanding just about anything, the key is to focus on the 1%. To not get lost in the details, but to think about the essence of what's really important, the 1% that gives life and meaning to the other 99%. Understanding that 1%, and especially being able to explain it to others, is the hallmark of a strong position. The 1% is the essence of simplicity and clarity. Whether you're selling a product or service or trying to convince anyone of anything, what's your 1%? When you can answer that question clearly, briefly, simply, in 10 words or less, and convey it to others, you and they are likely to be moved. Einstein said, if you can't state your position simply, you don't understand it well enough. Seth Godin doubled down to Einstein and said, if you can't state your position in 8 words or less, you don't have a position. So the purpose of a 1% is not to move somebody else to adopt your idea. The purpose is to offer something so compelling that it begins a conversation. The measure of success after your statement is when the other person says, tell me more. Now, the tell me more is not a license to start talking in paragraphs. The other person begins by being a participant to eventually arrive and an outcome that appeals to both of you. You engage the co-creation of a new story rather than handing somebody a prescription of information. So, to articulate your 1%, consider these three common types of value propositions. And these are just options. One, the one-word pitch. What is the one characteristic that you most want associated with your name, your business, your brand? A one-word equity. When anyone thinks of you, they associate that word. And when anyone says that word, they think of you. Now, to me recently, it was to make up a word, neuromentor. It amalgamated psychology, neuroscience, and mentor coaching. I liked it so much, I trademarked it and initiated the first of a new series of online offerings and renamed my blog. Now, other examples, each to date, are a little more famous than NeuroMentor. What technology company do you think of when you hear the word search? What credit card company comes to mind when you hear the word priceless? Obviously, Google and MasterCard. In his 2012 re-election campaign, President Obama built his entire strategy around one word, forward. The second, the question pitch. In 1980, Ronald Reagan was running for president of the United States in a really grim economy. Reagan simply asked the question, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? The question was designed not to make people, the question was designed in order to make people come up with their own reasons for agreeing or not. When people come up with their own answers for agreeing or believing something, they endorse the belief more strongly and become more likely to act on it because it becomes their story. The third type of value proposition is the Twitter pitch. Brief, simple, specific, a micro message of 140 or fewer characters. The mark of an effective tweet like that of an effective pitch is that it engages recipients and encourages them to take the conversation further. Now, further may be responding, sharing a tweet, clicking a link, or signing on for a seminar. What tweets do you think have the highest positive rating and response? Readers assign the highest rating to tweets that ask questions of followers. This confirms the power of questions to engage and to persuade. Asking the right questions has more power than giving people the right answers. We know this from the whole discipline of appreciative inquiry. And that's what we do in professional coaching. Appreciative inquiry can get much better results than seeking out and solving problems. So think of your preparation as having two parts or two steps, your purpose and your plan. Let's look at both of those just a little bit more. Your purpose. There are some fundamental key questions that may help you prepare your value proposition. You can clarify your purpose by making sure that you can answer these three questions. What do you want someone to know? What do you want someone to feel? And what do you want someone to do? And remember, we decide what we decide based on how we imagine we're going to feel when we do it. So, the second part, your plan. Then, before you connect with a prospect, write down these following four things. What will we talk about that would be the highest value objective for a client in an interaction or a discussion? What are two or three good questions to ask the prospect? If this discussion is successful, what's the next best action for that person and for me to take? And if you have time, maybe some additional possible topics, but I'd say stay focused on those first three. Now, for most people, the opposite of talking is not listening, it's waiting. When others speak, we usually divide our attention between what they're saying now and what we're going to say next. And the result is a mediocre halfway position on both. Some professionals don't even bother to wait. A typical study found that physicians interrupt the majority of patients in the first 18 seconds that they begin to speak during an appointment. This often prevents the patients from describing what brought them to the office in the first place, from telling their story. Here's an example of listening differently. Suppose you're raising money for a charity and ask someone to contribute $200. If she says, sorry, I can't give $200, consider that an offer. Perhaps she can donate a smaller amount. Or she might say, no, I can't give right now. Consider that an offer as well. You're reframing it. Focus on the right now and ask when might be a better time. or even consider the entire sentence as an offer, perhaps to contribute to your charity in some other way, such as being a volunteer. This way to hear responses as offers, which come in all shapes and sizes, is to reframe the way you listen and then change the way you respond. When both parties view an encounter as an opportunity to learn, the desire to sell or to win really fades into the background and becomes a non-issue. It becomes a different mindset of collaboration and engagement. And when we move from selling to serving, we engage a recipient as a collaborator and become empathically attuned to their needs and to our effectiveness in benefiting them to get inside the circle and go someplace new together. This non-salesy selling is the ability to influence, persuade, and change behavior while crafting a link between what others want and need and what you can provide them. We elicit from people what their specific goals are and frame what we can do to help them achieve those goals. So here are three phases of sales mastery. Engage, enroll, and create conviction. Each component is based on knowing who your client is, the specific person you're about to engage in a conversation. So let's look just a little more closely at these three phases. One, engage, to connect and create interest. Now, important to your story is your hero. Who's the hero of your story? Heroes come in all varieties: teller, listener, customer, product, location, tribe. The hero needs to fit the goal. The hero is the character in the story who gives the audience a point of view. All the passion in the world won't do any good unless we have some place to put it. That's where the hero comes in. That's who someone identifies with. The hero serves as a guide and a surrogate, the character that the reader or listener identifies with. If the audience experiences the story through the hero, and the story leads the hero to embrace a call to action, then your audience will automatically hear your call to action as well. This is one of the things we know from neuromarketing, to hook up people's brains and see how they decide on things. The hero enables your audience to feel the change your story promises. In every story, there's an element that can make the difference. That's the hero, the character, the product or brand the reader or viewer identifies with. Focus on the experience you deliver. That's the way we decide what we're going to do. Now, remember, Seminar 1 included how business and marketing stories like novels and films consist of three parts: the challenge, the development, and the resolution. The three basic components of story. The hero faces the challenge and develops it to the resolution. The hero may sometimes seem surprisingly hard to pinpoint, but unless you do, you don't have a story. When people donate to a charitable cause, it's not to save the lives of tens of thousands of children. That's an abstract notion. But the best story is how you could save one child. You can be the hero. For example, donation increases when moving from the abstract to the specific. When a famine in Ethiopia was substituted by a picture of Roika, a 7-year-old who faces a threat of severe hunger and even starvation, donation increased over 25%. How do you make your prospect the hero for your professional engagement? You ask. Ask what you want to achieve, what your primary challenge is, where you would ideally like to be in a year, and what constitutes an amazing achievement for you. Then you can know how to help them get there, and you're co-creating a story together. You need to know the single most important thing you could offer them, because remember, it's not about you, it's about them. To find that single most important thing, there are six keys to preparing, to informing you. Know your prospect's challenges and needs. This is all in your outline. Know your own product and its advantages and benefits. Know your competition, but never depreciate a competitor. Know the potential objections to have answers ready, briefly, succinctly, not justifying, arguing, but just to respond. Expect the best, a state of positive anticipation. And number six, create demand, ideally for the prospect to convince himself or herself. Anchor yourself for success. Peak performance comes from being in a peak state. The hallmark of a true professional is the ability to manage a state of mind. So, the keys to making effective contact are to set very specific goals, to be creative and playful and fun. Remember from my favorite grandmother, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Have a plan for what you're going to say. Again, make it clear, brief, succinct, and specific. And do it in abundance with qualified contacts. You're more likely to stop yourself from making contact if you're not in a peak state or if you believe that you're an interruption. To engage the prospect, connection and rapport are the foundation of all persuasion. Prospects will choose you because they trust you, like you, and especially because they have confidence in you. This confidence is the belief that you can help them get what they want or need. Importantly, they will choose you because they believe you have their best interest at heart. The answer to the Wharton School of Business quiz from the beginning of the seminar, the single factor that most determined if someone engaged or declined professional services, the clarity and confidence of stating the recommendations and fee. Remember, states of mind, especially confidence, are contagious. Caring people buy from caring people. They'll even help you close, as long as you have the prospect's best interest in mind. People want to be cared for. We all want to be appreciated. And the law of reciprocation. Whatever you put out, it will come back manyfold. So here are three psychological tactics for earning instant credibility. And remember, all of these have to be authentic. At times, it may be to argue against your own product or service. For example, indicate who the product or service is not for. It indicates you're not trying to sell to everybody, but to a more specific benefit for specific people. Another, which is more believable here? 60% of American households recycle regularly, or 60.37% of American households recycle regularly. The answer is that 78% of participants said the more specific number was more believable because it inferred accuracy. People believe precise numbers. And thirdly, when you make a claim, provide proof to back it up. Now, here are some different forms of proof if no scientific studies exist. Statistics, personal stories, testimonials, research, professional or media-given accolades. The second phase of sales mastery, enroll. Discover your prospect's needs and challenges. What are their primary needs, interests, challenges? The real problems that you can help them solve. Highlight the problems and resonate with the particular challenge they have. What they may minimize or deny or have difficulty in really articulating or engaging. So what does the prospect really need, really want? What's their primary challenge? And do they have the authority to make the decision, to say yes to you? Remember, focus changes state. So the question, what would be the best benefit to you of doing this? when your question prompts someone to imagine, it becomes real for them. If instead of asking them, you told them, they wouldn't believe. Remember, facts and information are outside in, the prefrontal cortex. That's not the decision-making area of the brain. When someone comes up with the answer, it's much more meaningful because it's their story. It's from an internal point of reference, not just more information. So, to enroll, ask questions. This creates a focus, a canvas to paint a picture. Ask questions so that someone gets a real experience inside themselves to give real answers. Questions are your greatest asset. Questions empower you and the prospects by putting them in a state that makes things more congruent. And, two, to do something very real. Engage all five senses to give a full experience. Some of the highest paid people in this country are people who induce state changes. What sells is what puts someone in a better state. Here's an exercise I would suggest to you. Each night for 7 nights before you go to bed, come up with 3 ideas about how you can get potential prospects to feel like they already own your product or service before even buying it. 3 things. Think of creative and unique ways to do that consistently, or depending on your biorhythms, first thing in the morning. Now, stick with it. Do it for 7 days. Most of the 21 that you come up with may seem goofy to you, but you only need 1 or 2 to really change your business. Here's an example of a real estate agent showing a house. The agent doesn't ask what you think about the living room, but instead asks you where you'd put your entertainment center. The agent wants to have the prospects experience it as if they've already bought it. One realtor's clients like a particular house they view, but they haven't decided. He then orchestrates an entire meal catered to the family in the home they're considering. They have a fabulous meal and see the fresh flowers he's brought in, and they can picture themselves in that home because they're already experiencing it. And their state's changed when they have a great meal. That house and experience become their story. The average sale from a showing of a house in the low single digits. His close rate, just over 80%. So model success. Find successful people and see what they do. They most likely will make the experience real using all 5 senses. If someone's eating food, they'll change their state, and the state links to the immediate anchor. That's why so much business is done at lunches and dinners, or the investment seminar at the best steakhouse. The realtor changes the states of mind of the purchasers and links pleasure and family togetherness with that house. He created a vivid Rorschach for the family to project their hopes and their excitement and their sense of family. Whatever is happening around someone when they have a strong feeling, it will be linked, anchored. Now, it's not logical. Is there any relationship between dog chow and a bell? Well, if they're coupled, Pavlov showed us a dog thought so. Pavlov's dog linked the bell with food and salivated, then only the bell was enough to cue the anticipation. What we associate to a stimulus determines our behavior because it changes our state, and the state determines how we perceive and process things. Put people in an environment that creates the state you want to link to your product. An example for me is the brilliant series of Super Bowl Budweiser commercials of the dog and the Clydesdales who are buddies. The one Clydesdale and the dog especially, they induce a state of mind of connection and bonding and the release of oxytocin in the brain. Here's the best signal of successful oxytocin release. Aww. The message goes right to your hippocampus to connect that experience with Budweiser. Another example. the new car smell that puts you in a state to buy a new car. BMW makes their brochures with a new car smell. I can verify that. The total sensory and emotional experience with the salesperson, that's you, matters. Get creative. Brainstorm. There's always a way to make it real and effective. Ask questions. Create an experience. Point, tell, show. You want a blank that will blank. Is that correct? You want an investment that will bring you security and income. Is that correct? Ask a question that will put people's minds back on their challenge. Focus on the experience they're buying. Show to emphasize if it all came true. If you had a seminar for your people, what would be the most important thing they could get out of it? If you had three results, what would those be? If you don't get those, what might it cost you? An example from one of my training program offerings. If your organization had an internal mentoring program, how would your people benefit? Especially if the mentors or supervisors were trained in the mind and brain sciences of change, including conversational, social, and emotional intelligence. Ask questions. Don't tell them. Ask how much more effectiveness or success would you have if you did this. Don't tell them. Get them to tell you. The third phase of sales mastery, compel, create conviction. Remember, people don't buy facts or features. They buy benefits for themselves. Selling is the transfer of emotion. For someone to buy, they must feel certain they will get what they want. Conviction starts with you first, then your client. But your client has to buy or attend an event for their reasons, not yours. The number one way, give them the experience and conviction they'll get what they want out of your product or service. The number two way, match to their number one value. For example, if it's freedom, show them how it will enhance their freedom. Find the dominant emotion for buying, even though the prospect will always believe it's for logical reasons. Now, copywriters tell us that there are five great motivators for marketing. Fear, car and life insurance people use this. Exclusivity, to be special or chosen. When narcissism goes shopping, a sense of specialness appeals, even creates a special bond, an exclusive offer, a private invitation. Three is greed. Now, although it has a negative connotation, the true meaning of greed is a rapacious desire for more, to succeed massively, to make a difference. Guilt. Some nonprofits use this. A need for approval. Product advertisements, like for cars and watches. The task of sales involves the science of neuromarketing. The questions you ask people determine what they focus on. This is the real power of questions. We know this from coaching. At any time, we're only focusing on a really small band of data, what is available to us. Our brains are like a camera in that we only see what we focus on. Do one benefit at a time, not the whole load. Our imagination is 10 times more powerful than our will. So make it real and assume the sale. When people don't buy, it's because they've linked buying with more pain than not buying. When people do buy, they link buying with more pleasure than not buying. So ask a question to focus on the benefit. Remember, people buy for emotional reasons and justify with logic. Now, I want to include an aspect here that I mentioned about converting objections into commitments. If someone has an objection, rather than counter, ignore, or circumvent it, find out specifically what it is. Remember my discussion at the beginning of does proven evidence change beliefs? An objection equates to getting more information. The best salespeople average 5 objections before conversion. And be sure that an objection is not the projective voice of the seller. So an objection is a question in disguise. An objection provides an opportunity to do three things. Hear the primary concern, or to crystallize it, so it can be addressed and reframed. Understand what the person's belief or fear is, and listen to the real question. So, objections are signposts. They're your resources. A mistake is to fight the objection. The key to influence is to align with the person, to get inside the circle with them. In spite of the fear, will the benefit be greater in doing it? If the answer in their gut is yes, they'll proceed. The best way to respond to an objection is to take each objection and interpret it as a question. Rather than a reason for not buying, hear it as a request for more information. I can't afford it. Reframed. Please show me how I can afford it so it's worth it. I have to talk it over with someone else. Reframed. Please give me enough reasons I can go ahead and buy it without having to check and get someone else's opinion. Welcome an objection because it's information and a stepping stone to success. Treat an objection as powerful and important. Perhaps, if it's applicable, even compliment the objection as a good question, but because it allows both of you to think about it and consider it. So, here are some considerations to convert objections into commitments. These are in your outlines. One, don't engage the objection by countering it. Focus directs attention. Two, hear them out. Three, feed it back as a question. It puts the objection back to the questioner to examine and explain. Often when somebody tries to explain an objection, they'll withdraw it. Four, get more information. Is this the real objection? Five, align with the prospect to collaborate. In a collaboration, you're on the same side. You're both in the circle. If you fight an objection, it will limit you. So instead of countering the question or objection, align with it. I appreciate or I respect how you feel about that. Or it is an expensive investment. Six, turn the objection into a question. Reframe it. Questions are the genesis of focus. You can't answer an objection, but you can answer a question. It seems that the real question is, can you get enough value to justify the purchase? Or it sounds like your concern is how you can get benefits now. Focus on the benefit rather than the concern. For example, if there's an issue with experience, reframe it. Brag about it. Do it up front. Eight, assume the sale. The best persuaders assume the sale. Congratulate them on a wise decision rather than thanking them for the sale. And finally, one thing I want to add, the psychology of closing, because this is the point that both parties, usually hate the most. So do the close as quickly and painlessly as possible. A man had a painful tooth that he knew needed to be extracted. He called his dentist, whose patient he had been for a long time. The two knew each other really well. He asked how much the dentist would charge him to extract the tooth and how long it would take. The dentist said, I'll charge you $185, and it'll only take a minute. The man responded, only a minute? That's a lot of money for just a minute. The dentist responded, well, if time is an issue, I can take as long as you want. So, have your closings planned in advance, word for word, but sound natural and spontaneous, like you're talking, not like you're reading a script. So, the major requirements for closing, a positive, enthusiastic mindset, clarify the client's challenge, help the client understand the benefit you're offering, and make the recommendation very specific. Remember the three components of story that we talked about that you can make a recommendation for your professional services or your professional product in three sentences, one sentence for each, the challenge, the development, and the resolution. So you can summarize the client's challenge, focus on how you can help, the development, and recommend, for example, mentor coaching, a framework and fee, the resolution. Remember, the hero is the person, place, product, or brand that enables somebody to feel the change your story promises. How can you make your client the hero of his or her story? So, make it easy and create a future. Create a relationship that lasts through the years. The most important part of the engagement is to give more than expected to generate an ongoing relationship. You may want to even prevent buyer's remorse by future pacing. Future pace every time somebody purchases. Have buyers imagine themselves in the future, ways they will use the product or service in the future. A year from now, what will you be doing with this training that will make you glad you've done it? Link something present to your product. For example, I build into my training of mentor coaches a quarterly mentor group and white paper where we share success stories and mastermind challenges, free attendance to some of my teleseminars, a registry for referrals. I want it to be a professional family for each to be really successful. For corporate mentoring programs after the training, a monthly mentor group teleconference for 12 months, each around a specific continuing learning topic. It's a relationship, not a sale. Give them a reason to buy, theirs, not yours, emotional and logical, both. People will put off buying if they can, so build in units of conviction. Make it fun. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Have I said that before a few times? So, finally, in conclusion, in our last minute, and then we'll move to discussion, some strategies of successful top sellers, a summary. These are common to all successful professionals who engage collaboratively with people for services or products. One. Enter your optimum state for the task. Reset after the last experience, a number one quality. Prepare yourself physically and emotionally. Remember, your state of mind of confidence is what somebody will be primed to engage and purchase. Two, qualify prospects. Find their deepest needs, the core emotional need or challenge that drives them, then show them how to get it through what you offer, how to address it. Three, manage the prospect's state of mind. Four, give prospects a way to justify buying to satisfy a need. Five, remain flexible. The person most flexible controls the situation to be successful. To be successful, know the outcome. Take action. Know what getting closer and getting further away looks like so that you can change your approach until you get what will benefit the prospect. And finally, number six, become a team player. Consistently attuned to the prospect's needs. Is there more value than the concern they bring? Create and sustain interest. Continuously build trust and rapport. And finally, this thought. Imagine inventing a device that can record memories, dreams, ideas, and transmit them to your brain. This device, this game-changing technology, is storytelling. Okay, we're in discussion mode now. I'm interested in any thoughts, questions, comments that you have, or clarifications.
Dave, it's Marguerite.
Hey, go ahead, please.
That was really interesting. And can I take you right back to the beginning where we were talking about pitches?
We were talking
can
about what?
Can you send the pitch?
The pitch, okay.
Can you demonstrate what a Pixar pitch would look like?
What a Pixar pitch would be?
Mm-hmm. The once upon a time, every day,
Okay. It would be, I believe an example might be the example I gave about a mentoring program for an organization. Would it benefit your group to have more of an awareness of emotional, social, and conversational intelligence to have more effective conversations with each other? Does that help you? Does that give an example of what you had in mind?
No, I honestly don't understand it.
I'm sorry. You say that again. You ask what?
I do not understand the Pixar pitch as it relates to some of the examples you gave later. So let's say, for example, you are thinking about a client and their pain points.
Okay, let me clarify, because I'm not the three kind of pitches that I mentioned are the one word and the question pitch and the Twitter pitch. And the Twitter is simply a very brief, succinct presentation of what you do. So
I understood.
A message of 140 or fewer characters, just as an example.
Okay.
So
tell me
your question again.
In the summary, you have listed the Pixar pitch as
okay,
an example.
Okay, I didn't go into that in the presentation, so I'm probably confusing you, and that's why I was confused. I didn't go into that. There are more things in the outline than I really talked about, because I wanted to have more discussion, but I also wanted to convey information that I thought might be helpful that would be in the outline. There are a number of areas that the outline will have more information for you than I actually covered in the presentation, and that's one of them.
Okay, great.
Does that help?
It does.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, well, thanks.
Thank you.
Other comments, questions, or things you'd like to talk more about? Do you feel that you have a sense of an application of these principles for talking with a potential client?
Hi, Davis Guy. I wanted to just say that I feel there's a lot of information, but I commend you for sharing it and getting me to think in a different way of how I'm marketing my business, and also how I market collectively to my prospects. So it really gives me a format to follow. And in the past, I'm not sure that I thought of it that particular way. So when you talk about being compelling and creating a story and having a hero, all of those are things that I didn't think about putting together and packaging. So I think now I have a way to take these different components and really look at my marketing strategy and reformat it in a way that I think is going to be more beneficial for me.
Well, that's really well said, and a great synopsis, because what you said in essence is, you know, what we know is how we make sense of things, how we understand things is by way of story. And our brains are wired to generate story, and they're pattern-seeking organs. So when we help someone craft and put together a story, they're going to remember it. Because it creates a balanced learning, both sides of the brain, and the story incorporates that and will make a memory of it. So stories are not only how we understand something, but how we remember it. And it's what we remember from our own internal conversation of what someone says to us that we're going to take away. So that's important in the story you develop, is to help someone develop a story that they have an internal conversation. That's what they're going to take away. Their story in response to yours is what they'll take away. So the more that you're informed about how to help someone craft a story will be most useful. And And that's the application even to having a discussion with a potential client about professional services, and even to making the recommendation for professional services of incorporating those three components of the story so that you can make it clear, brief, succinct, and really make it fit with how someone's mind and brain works. So I'd say from what you said, that's what I hoped people would take away from this. So thanks for summarizing.
Sure.
That's great. We got maybe one more minute. Other questions or comments or anything else you'd like to say or ask?
This is Tina.
Yeah,
I actually was very interested in the Pixar pitch because my dad was a movie guy. So when I read that, I thought, yeah, because that story of the hero, which you mentioned, or the heroine, people are captured by that. So I'm looking at that thinking, how can I convey that? That the hero comes with, they're tired and they don't have a way to open the door, and somehow the coach says, look in your pocket or something like this. So I could see where that could be really useful for me because I do a lot of this, use a lot of metaphors when I'm talking to people. I like it because of that, until finally, all of a sudden, their bank account was full and they had to open a second account. I just like it as a prospect.
Well, great. And each of the different pitches may appeal to you a bit more or may be fashioned for a particular client. But the important thing, I think, from so many of the studies is that it's what a client will say to himself or herself as a response to what you say that they're going to remember and that they're going to act on. And when they have that as a point of reference, when it's their story, it's going to be meaningful, it's going to be remembered. That's my example of the physician who prescribes and just tells somebody what to do, that there's not a great compliant. Less than one in four people do it. And they figure out some way to do it because it's not the conveyance of a story for that patient. When your client develops a story and you help them, you as a mentor coach help them collaborate to create a better story, whether that's wellness or money or life or relationship or any other career, any other aspect, then it's their story and it becomes an effectiveness for them, a mastery for them. So this is what you can help them do, look toward, and then do yourselves in your services or your products. I know we're over a little bit. Thank you all for your participation, your feedback. I really appreciate it. If you have other questions, fire off an email to me. I'll be eager to see and hear what you do with this if it's helpful to you. So thanks very, very much. Bye now.
Thank you, Dave. Bye, all.
Thank you, Dave.
Bye, everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Dr. Dave. Bye, everyone.
Hey.